welcome to a brand new episode of Now on the Clock podcast, your number one sports fan podcast. I'm Nate Stockwell, thankful that you joined us. We got a lot to cover, so let's jump right in. All right, as usual, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Paulie Mack and Johnny G. Paulie, what's up in Florida?
Nothing much. Just finished doing some woodworking around the house. Put up some drapes today. The wife's excited. Finally got some coverings for the lanai screen window, so she's pretty happy about that.
Is that the drapes behind you?
That is the drapes
behind you. Oh, nice.
Woodworking, nice. Is woodworking some kind of sexual term? That
it can be used. I don't use it in those terms, but it can be used. No, I took some wood that was going across maybe a 13-foot span, and put some railroad spike ties in those and hung the drapes from them. Looks pretty sweet from the other side.
Hey, you are my hero. What are you smoking today?
I am smoking a San Cristobal Masa Tiempo or something like that. I forget the name of it. Basically, it's about a Churchill-sized cigar, and it's made the Pepin Garcia, my father.
Oh, yeah. Great line.
Tatawahe. So they make this for Ashton.
Can you hold it up for our viewers? Let me take a look at that label.
Viewers.
Awesome. Where'd you get that?
Thompson Cigar 5-pack.
Thompson Cigar 5-pack.
So basically, you don't really get any deals if you order one or two 5-packs. If you get 4 5-packs or more, the price drops about $23 per 5-pack, which is about $5 a cigar. And that's a pretty good deal for this
awesome
beauty right
looks
here.
Great.
About $10.
I am jealous. Looks good.
Tastes good.
Johnny G in California. What's going on, buddy?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Had a long weekend. Got one of those water jump houses for the kids because it's super hot out here in hell. And they had a good time. Got to use it on Saturday, Sunday, and the people didn't come back and pick it up for whatever reason. So we're using it again today. So the kids are having a great time. And I'm looking forward to getting together with you guys and talking some sports and doing this show. And speaking of this show, I just want to take time out right now to thank everybody that's listened. You know, we've only been around now for about 19 days. And the response and feedback we've gotten from everybody out there has been incredible. So I want to say thank you to everybody out there. Please continue to listen to us. Please continue to share our podcast with your friends if you enjoy it. And just a big thank you from all three of us.
And a shout out to whoever listens to us every week in France. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, guys, let's jump right into this, guys. We had a block. Is it a blockbuster? We got a blockbuster trade in the NFL. We got to love it. We got to love it. Let's talk about this trade.
Jamal Adams going to the New York Jets. Or Seattle Seahawks. The Jets sure got a lot. The Seahawks sure gave up a lot to get him. A couple first-round picks and a third-round pick. And a journeyman safety and Bradley McDougal, but good enough to be a starter. They gave up.
All right, recap these numbers. What was the specifics of the trade?
A 2021 first round pick, a 2022 first round pick, and a 2021 third round pick. Seattle has, I believe, a 2022 or 2021 fourth round pick going back to the Jets with Bradley McDougal.
Okay, what's your guys' take? I like this trade. I love Seattle being aggressive. I mean, they were really close to having home field advantage last year in the playoffs. They're in the best division or best division in the NFL, NFC, of course. I think it's a great trade for them. I think it strengthens them. I like the trade. I don't care about the assets. I'm a little bit different on draft picks than you guys are, but I like the trade. What's your guys' take?
Go ahead, Paul. Okay. Well, I'll just say that I'm sorry for all the nitpickers out there. Seattle is sending a fourth round pick. The Jets are sending a fourth round pick to Seattle with Jamal Adams. So for all the nitpickers out there, before you call me out on that. Look, the Seattle defense was ranked 27th against the pass last year, 22nd against the run. They were the worst pass rush in the NFL with 28. If you look at the defensive metrics, hurries, quarterback pressures, knockdowns, they were 25th or worst in the league last year. They've lost Jadeveon Clowney. Now they've given up a bunch of draft capital for a safety. Rasheem Green comes back. He has 4 sacks. He would be their leading sacker from last year now. 4 sacks. They signed Bruce Irvin, who had 8.5 in the offseason. I look at him as a depth piece at 33 years old, though, at this point in his career. I think it's a better move for the Jets. What do you think, Paul?
I think the Jets did an incredible job on this trade. And I like Jamal Adams. Don't get me wrong. I think he's an impactful player. But I think a lot of time in this league, we think that guys are better than they are based off of their draft, where they were drafted. And he was drafted, I want to say, top five in the NFL. And he was a five-star prospect coming out of high school, went to LSU. But I really think that he is an incredible hitter and player of the safety position, but he's not a playmaker. I look at his stats. Let me pull his stats up for you right now.
You're right. He's not Ed Reed.
He's not Troy Polamalu.
But he plays in a division where they run the ball a lot, right? And you said he's a hitter. He's a filler. He's going to make plays on the line of scrimmage.
He's a hitter. He, like, if you look at his stats, let me pull up his stats here.
Please do.
He has very similar stats. Who was the safety that they traded and sent to the Jets?
Bradley McDougal.
Yeah. All right, so I got Jamal Adams' stats right here. 60 solo tackles, 14 assists, 6.5 sacks, three of which were in one game, only one pick, and two forced fumbles. So turnover-wise, he's only created three. The safety that they sent in the trade this past year, 50 tackles, same amount of assists, two interceptions, and one forced fumble. So as far as game-changing plays, they both have the same amount. Yeah, is he a hard hitter? Are you going to see his highlights on SportsCenter? Yeah, maybe. But in the big scheme of things, you want playmakers on your defense and difference makers. And I think that the Jets got a haul of draft capital to make a difference on in their team.
They're a lot of draft capital they could blow. But here's the difference between Adams and McDougal. Offense has got a game plan around where Adams is on the field. He has a presence with him. Yeah, he may not be a rangy ball hawk safety, but he is a player. And he's a player in the run game that comes up, fills holes. I don't want to call him an extra linebacker out there, but he's going to make a difference in the NFC West, where the 49ers are a run-heavy offense. The Rams run the ball a lot. I think Arizona plans on running the ball a little bit more. I think he's a difference maker. And, I mean, look, no disrespect to McDougal, but Bradley McDougal is just the guy.
Yeah, are we really comparing Jamal Adams with Bradley McDougal?
No.
Stat-wise, they're stat-wise.
I'm not comparing. I'm just talking about when you have the J.J. Watts or the T.J. Watts or the Ed Reeds or Polamalus or the Earl Thomases, to compare apples to apples safety, you've got playmakers, Minkah Fitzpatrick, people that make a difference in the turnover game. They're either forcing a fumble or they're getting an interception or they're changing the game for your team. And I don't see it from them. I see a hard hitter that's like an extra support in the run game, and he's super fast, but is it translating to wins for his team?
Can I ask you a million-dollar question?
Give it to me.
For you. Go like this with your shirt real quick. I want people to see this. See that team on there. What does that shirt say? Okay, look, last year the Steelers made a trade for a safety, correct?
Correct.
A safety was kind of Meyer. He was okay. He put up good numbers for Dolphins team.
He was only on the Dolphins for 1 year.
Okay, all right, but listen. He went to a team, a great team with a great defense where he was pretty much elite.
Yes.
Right? Sometimes being around better players, a better system, a coach like Pete Carroll or a coach like Minkah Fitzpatrick went to, with the Steelers, it makes a gifted player elite.
Okay, you're right. However, are we really calling the Seattle Seahawks defense gifted players? I just told you, they were the 27th ranked pass defense, the 22nd ranked run defense. They were horrible in the red zone, which will help there. But I'm failing to understand the plan here in Seattle. You trade Frank Clark for a number one draft pick to Kansas City because you don't want to pay him $100 million and $63 million guaranteed. But you'll turn around and you'll pay a safety. Now, look, Adams is playing this year. They've already agreed on his current contract. He's not going to get more money this year. But with the cap going down to $175 million from $198 million next year, I'm failing to see how this makes him better when you take the totality of their moves. I mean, who'd they get in the draft on the edge? They got Alton Robinson. And they got Daryl Taylor out of Tennessee. I guess they're okay, but they're not high-level prospects. You've lost Clowney. So I'd say your pass rush is worse. You run a cover three. They went in 2018 with Frank Clark. They were the 11th ranked defense. So last year, they blitzed the fifth least amount in the league. They lose him. Clowney comes in. He only gets three sacks, and they move up to the team that they blitzed the 16th most in the league. So the fifth least to the 16th most. How are they better? How does Jamal Adams make them better? What's going to happen is coaches like Kyle Shanahan are going to find the holes in that secondary because they have to bring the blitz to apply pressure.
John, you bring up a good question. You're like, what's Seattle's plan? And when I look back to last year, I think they really think they're one player away because they traded for Clowney in the middle of the season. Then they're throwing so much draft capital. They actually think that they're one defensive playmaker away. And I think they're grasping at straws right now. They're desperate. They think that they need – if they just had the Seattle defense of the past, they'd be in the Super Bowl again. And I think they've got way too many holes.
Okay.
They're not going to plug it with one guy.
Yeah, okay, I respect that. But I've always had Seattle ranked pretty high. But let's talk about this. The Niners were the cream of the crop at the NFC last year. Seattle was almost one play away from having home field advantage in the playoffs. I know San Francisco didn't want to go back up to Seattle and play there again. So despite their poor metrics on defense last year, they were still in the mix.
Because they had Russell Wilson, they're extremely well coached. Give you that. But they're about four offensive linemen away from being an elite team. They gave up 48 sacks last year, tied with Matt Ryan and Kyler Murray for the most sacks in the league. Explosive playmakers at the skill position. DK Metcalf set all kinds of records last year. He's going to be a great player. But I fail to see how Seattle's made themselves better from when they ended the year.
Okay, well, what I like, they got a 32-year-old quarterback. They are on win now mode. I don't know if they're one player away from the Super Bowl, but I think they're a contender, and I think their window with Wilson is closing. They have about a 4-year window while he's elite that they got to make bold moves. And I think their GM, John Schneider, I think he's done a great job there. I'm not a Pete Carroll fan, but I think Pete Carroll's built a really great culture there. I think they're close. They stay healthy. There's any setbacks with any teams in the NFC West, they could be in the Super Bowl.
So were they? What would you say? Would you say they're one play away last year, or one play away from the Super Bowl?
No. They're one play away, which I believe it was one play that Niner game
from winning the West.
One play away from earning home field advantage. That's it.
Okay. You remember, and I think they're going to make the mistake of this team. And I'm not saying it's the same mistake. They're not apples to apples. But when you think you're so close and you're just that one player away, remember the Raiders when they missed a field goal to go to the Super Bowl and they end up drafting Janikowski in the first round? They thought, if we just had a kicker, we'd win. And that's what Pete Carroll and them were thinking. They're like, if we just had this one defensive playmaker, they tried for Clowney, didn't work out. Now they're going to Jamal Adams. And maybe it does work out, but I think they're grasping at straws and they gave up way too much. They're living in this year only.
Well, I get why – from Seattle's point of view, I get why they did it. And, Nate, I agree with you. If you think about the next 2 years, what's their record going to be at worst, 10-6? So where does that put them in the first round, the back end of the first round, right? So – and you're not guaranteed to get a player like Jamal Adams in the back end of the round, so I understand that. I would just rather have done that for a pass rusher than a safety, especially when your defense has no teeth.
Well, Paul has always been a fan of Bruce Irvin.
No.
And I don't think Bruce Irvin is just a guy. I think he's going to have 10 sacks this year on that defense. I know he's getting old, but I like Bruce Irvin.
So at 34, he's going to set his career high in sacks because his career high is 8.5.
He plays the Rams 2 times a year.
Well, hold on a second. Second question. They haven't signed this guy. They still have – he's complained about a contract over and over and over and over and over again. He is basically – done the Terrell Owens and the Antonio Browns, and he's forced his way off the Jets. Now, what is Seattle going to do? What kind of contract are they going to give this guy, and are they going to have any room for anybody else?
Well, can I ask a question? How much is Mark Barron getting paid?
He's not. I don't think he's on anybody's team.
You know, we talked about this last week. If we're going to sign a safety to a long-term deal, we want somebody that could – we want a playmaker patrol guy, right? In today's NFL where they're passing so much, that's who we give the long-term deals to. I think Adams is an outlier here because the division he plays in, but I wouldn't sign him to a long-term deal. I see him more like a kind of a Mark Barron, a linebacker role, just because it's going to help in the division.
Hey. So you would give up two first-round picks for and not sign him to a long-term deal? So you're renting him for 2 years?
Hey, just to –
possibly. I want to see the impact he has on that team. He may earn the deal, though, Paul, because he's played on a piss-poor team in New York. He may earn the deal with his play in Seattle. So it's kind of a wait and see for me. If he shows a little bit more range, he makes a few more plays on the ball in the secondary. If he knocks out Deebo Samuel, you know, just knock the fuck out.
I'm waiting for that to happen. Somebody's going to do that to Deebo. It's not going to be fun.
No, Deebo's a beast.
Quick question. His PFF grade was 87.5. I'm sorry to ask this if we don't have the answer. Do we know what his coverage grade was?
I do not know. We could post that next week or tomorrow. I don't have that top of my head today.
So with they trade for Clowney, former number one pick, would never lived up to his billing, was more hypey. I don't think he ever had more than 9.5 sacks. And then they got him on the team and they realized that he's more reputation than performance. And here we have another guy, as I pointed out when we started this discussion, that he doesn't have a lot of playmaking plays. And somehow they think when he's going to get into their defense, it's going to make a difference. I just don't see it.
I disagree with this.
Buyer's remorse.
Again, I watched a lot of Clowney play last year. And he does take some plays off, maybe some games. But he made a lot of impactful plays that didn't show up in the box. And not everyone could be Aaron Donald, right? Some guys, you could put steady pressure, take away some running lanes, and you don't get the sack numbers, right? So, I mean, I really kind of disagree with that on Clowney, but he's no longer on the team anymore. I didn't really scout Jamal Adams enough to say his impact, but he's a player. And hey, I think he's going to do well in that organization.
How can you make plays against the Bills? And the dog, how can you not make plays against those teams?
So I got a question, Nate. Do you think Clowney is a better player than Bruce Irvin?
Player, athlete, yeah, he's a better player.
He is a better. Okay, fair enough.
Hey, do you think that this is a new happening going around the NFL where the players, like I mentioned earlier, Antonio Brown and now Jamal Adams, are forcing their way off teams because they would want to be on better teams? Like Jamal Adams, man, he was begging to go to the Cowboys. He badmouthed his owner. He badmouthed his coach. He basically did everything he could to get his way out, similar to what Antonio Brown did in Pittsburgh and Oakland. And is this a new thing that we're going to see every year amongst
NFL? Let me say something. Antonio Brown's an outlier. Or not really, but you don't talk your way out of a good organization. That's unacceptable and wrong. He had a golden opportunity to maybe be a Hall of Famer with the Steelers. So what he did is wrong and stupid. But however, players that are on bad teams, you know you got a, 10-year window as a defensive player, maybe 6, 10, 12 years if you're lucky, right? You want to be in a situation where you're competing for Super Bowls and opportunities. The Jets have been bad for so long, and, you know, me being a Ram fan, with all the poor football they had, I've seen a lot of players leave and jettison because they want to play for an opportunity to get somewhere, to be remembered. You don't get remembered being a great player on a bad team. You remember being a good player on a great team. That's how you get remembered.
I got to agree with you, Nate. But this guy was bitching about – I just wonder what his motives are. He's bitching at the beginning of last year about wanting more money, and then it turned into wanting off the Jets. You know, he's bad-mouthing the coach, Gase, saying he's not the right leader for the job. He came out against Woody Johnson, who – you know, another owner accused of racial and sexual allegations, right? So, or being accused, there's allegations of racial and sexual stuff, right? I'm sorry, I'm tired. So, you talk about Woody Johnson, you talk about your head coach. It was only a matter of time till they moved him. But I agree with you. The Jets are in disarray, haven't won anything of significance since 1969. I don't want to hear about Parcells or anybody else. They haven't won anything, right, since 69. But what is this trade? What does this trade leave the Jets looking like? I mean, this could be a great move for them. They have all this draft capital to move up and down the board now to target impact players, but will they take advantage of it?
Can I touch on this first, Paul? Can I touch on this real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Bad organizations fuck up the draft. I don't care how much capital you have. If you're poorly ran, if you're replacing positions, if you don't have the right leadership in place, if you don't have the right coordinators in place, who cares how much capital you have? You misuse it. I mean, every year we get all hyped for the draft. You know, this crappy team has three number one picks. 2 years later, They're picking at the top of the first round again. So I don't trust the Jets to do right by this.
And can I just give you can I just say last year in their first year as a regime, they have a first, no second, and a third round pick. And with their third round pick, they take Ja'Kai Polite from Florida. This is a pass rusher. You guys, I don't know. You should know him, Nate. He was on your practice squad.
Yeah, he still is. They got high hopes for him.
Okay. Well, he ran a slow 40 time at the combine, then comes back at his pro day and runs an even slower 40 time. He scored a spark score in the 14th percentile that measures your athleticism at the combine. There were character concerns. Before last year, he went I think he was projected to be a first-round pick. He slides down all the way to 68 overall. All those red flags, you don't have a second-round pick. You're trying to rebuild your culture, and that's who you take in the third round? You can't take chances like that.
I think it's a fifth-round grade. Yeah, they blew it. So the same people are making their draft decisions. I don't trust them.
I'd be worried if I'm a Jets fan. I think they got an extremely awesome haul. I think the Seahawks got played here because I don't think the Niners had any interest in Adams. I don't know how much the Cowboys had in him, but I think the Seahawks got played here and gave up way too much. But I don't think the Jets take advantage of it. Sam Darnold struggled last year, starting with mono. Le'Veon Bell, they gave big money to. What did he do? He ran for 3-2 a carry. What did C.J. Mosley do? He's hurt for most of the year. And then they give big money to that bust Tremaine Johnson at quarterback. Their leading receiver was Jamison Crowder. They expected big things from Robbie Anderson. He sucked. I mean, this team has some pieces on the defensive side of the ball. They were number 2 against the run last year. Their penetration rate in the middle, though, was 27th in the league with Quinnen Williams there. But again,
John's talking soft tissue again.
Much like Seattle, their defense has no teeth, no pass rush.
So you don't win with pieces, though. You win with players and system, and I don't believe in them.
So, Nate, I agree with you in that they might screw it up, a la the Cleveland Browns, because they draft at the top every year. But you can't argue that when you get more chances at the top, you have a better chance as hitting on those great players. And they did if you consider Jamal Adams a great player. So now they have two opportunities to get that player, their own pick, as well as Seattle's two consecutive years.
Yeah, they'll be picking 25 to 29.
You're guesstimating. Think about the Minka Fitzpatrick deal when Roethlisberger went down. The Dolphins made that deal because they thought that they were going to get a super high pick, and it became in the middle. You never know what's going to happen to a team. Russell Wilson can get hurt. That pick goes to a top 10 pick.
You never know.
You never give up that draft capital.
Okay, two things real quick. I'm going to touch on this. I know we're bringing out an outside team, but who has a better record in 2020, the Jets or the Dolphins?
The Dolphins. Well,
The Jets weren't that bad last year. They finished 7-9. But I really like Brian Flores in Miami.
Yeah, for sure.
I like what they're doing. And then also, let's talk from a fantasy perspective. What I know we talked about his pass numbers, but what kind of impact? Because, look, Pete Carroll does a great deal. He's a coach of secondary, but he brings out the best on secondary players. What kind of impact will Jamal Adams have for fantasy owners this upcoming year? I mean, can he be a guy with, like, maybe 5 sacks and 5 picks?
Well, if you're in an IDP league, I'm not picking Jamal Adams anywhere high because he's been in the league a few years, and he's proven he's not a turnover machine. He's not forcing a bunch of fumbles. He's definitely not getting picks. So, I mean, he's getting some tackles, but as you can see, not much more than McDougal or whatever.
Bradley McDougal, baby. And much like a general manager, I'm not taking a safety high in a draft. I don't care if it's a fantasy draft or anywhere else.
Do you guys think over under 4 interceptions for 2020? You guys got over or under?
Under. Way under.
I'm gonna take over. I think.
Hey.
All ties lose.
I think he's gonna produce in Seattle. He's gonna help out Seattle. I just don't see how they're a better team than when the season ended.
Don't you find it ironic that Earl Thomas basically forced his way out by in Seattle by bad-mouthing everybody in the organization because he wanted a new deal, and they got rid of him, and then now they've got another malcontent who forced his way out of the Jets at the exact same position?
I have a feeling he's going to be very happy for 2 years in Seattle.
He's not going to be happy until he signs his new contract.
If that were true, though, he would have forced them to give him more money now. unless he wanted out of New York that bad that he was willing to go to Seattle without a new deal, which he was evidently.
No, he wants a new deal. And when he didn't get it, that's when he started going ranting and raving. He even got Le'Veon Bell pissed at him because
he's a liar.
He was the one that recruited Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell called him a liar on social media.
Well, I honestly, I can't speak for him, but I don't think he wanted a new deal with that organization.
That's all he's been asking for. And when they did not renegotiate and give him a new deal, that's when he started bitching and moaning.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't care how good you are. I don't care if you're a pass rusher or quarterback. You're only playing 2 years on your rookie deal and you already want a new deal. The NFL has to do something. You either shorten the rookie contracts, make them 3 years, make them 2 years. Stop with these holdouts, man. Stop. It's as a fan, I dread this time of year because I'm waiting to know who's going to threaten to hold out, who wants more money. It sucks.
Well, they all want it. All right, guys, enough of that. We guys talked that one. It's going to be interesting. Going to be interesting what happens in Seattle and New York. I just hope we get us some football. I hope we have a football season, which leads us to our next topic. Baseball is back. It may be on life support based on the news today, but baseball is back. You guys excited? What's your guys' take? I'm happy. I was happy till an hour ago.
You go first, Paul.
Well, I will say.
You guys heard the latest news, though, right?
Yeah, well, I will say that I began to watch a baseball game, and it was embarrassing. First of all, baseball is embarrassing the way they play it nowadays. They never steal bases or nobody's moving or anything like that. That's just an embarrassment for the state of baseball. That's why people are bored. But also, I'm looking at these cardboard cutouts behind home plate, and if I'm in the second, third, fourth row, I'm super pissed because – all these big fat heads in the first row are covering my head. I'm like, what'd I pay for? A cardboard cutout? You can see my ball cap maybe. I'm like, what is this behind home plate? You're better off just putting the seats back there like a spring.
That's a joke. The cardboard cutouts are a joke. But one thing, I don't know if you guys heard the news today, but a few, was it Marlin players?
Organization? 14 people from the traveling party for the Marlins, 9 players so far have been confirmed to have tested positive for COVID. They were playing the Philadelphia Phillies. They were in the visiting locker room. That's why the Yankees game has been postponed. They were supposed to come to Philly today and play, but obviously they'd have to use the visiting locker room. Here's my question. You idiots decided you wanted the money. You wanted to come back and play. I don't have a problem with that. You didn't think this was a possibility? Why are you postponing games? You have 60-man rosters. I know they're not active, but you have a 60-man roster that you can pull from. Why isn't there a contingency plan? This was going to be an issue. You knew this was a possibility to happen. You should have an alternate site prepared, and you should have an alternate team prepared. You decided to come back and play these games. So if they don't announce some kind of contingency plan in the next 24 hours, it just goes to show how stupid baseball is.
Yeah, well, this is a bad, bad look. Bad, bad look. And baseball didn't have a bubble. But this is a critical season for Major League Baseball because their collective bargaining agreement ends this year, right? So, I mean, they didn't want to have a work stoppage. They needed to have a season. Man, they didn't really protect, I don't want to say protect players, but their plan, again, was bogus. And I don't know how they're going to recover. I mean, I initially was excited this morning, not like jumping up because I agree with you. Baseball has changed drastically in our lifetime. And I'm not really a major fan of the play now, but it's still, I love it for the nostalgia. I grew up with baseball. I like baseball. I like the crack of the bat. I wish we can go back to more strategy days, more athletes and less analytical sabermetric approach to the game. But I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, if you're postponing games in the first week, I mean, you don't if you test positive for this virus, you don't get better in 5 days. You
right,
like
2 weeks.
2 weeks of the season.
You're done for 2 weeks. So why don't they have a contingency plan announced already? That's my whole point. You knew as soon as somebody tested positive, whether it was one person or 25 people, they're done for 2 weeks. You should be ready to go with your backup plan. And for them to not know, and I get it, they're still doing testing and all this other kind of stuff, but this is a billion-dollar industry. You have to be better prepared than this. The money was most important to them. Nobody thought about the health until the last minute. They put a bad plan together, and this is what you get.
Well, organizations and countries are only as good as their leadership. But baseball's leadership has been gone for probably 15 years.
Yeah,
30 years. I mean, let's talk about this. Paul, when did you back out of baseball? I don't know who the commissioner, but you were a fan. You grew up a fan of the sport.
I'll tell you,
lost you.
So it was the year where Sammy Sosa and McGuire were hitting a few dingers, and Tony Gwynn, those of you who don't remember him, he was hitting over 400 after the All-Star break, about the All-Star break, and the players went on strike, and they stayed on strike, and there was no World Series. I had never spent more money going to baseball games than I did that year. And when the players said, hey, we don't need a World Series, and then I found other things to do in what I would do watching baseball or the World Series, that's the last time I went paid money to go to a professional baseball game. They've basically it's not as interesting. They're living for the home run. There's no stealing like the Cardinals.
Real quick. You say you lost interest because of player selfishness. When they took away an opportunity to watch a World Series or a champion be anointed, that's basically what got you. And then when they came back to the new play of all this analytics, these shifts, home run or strikeout.
Yes.
That interest, you didn't have any interest.
Well, first of all, two things soured me on baseball. One, the game takes way too long. If you watch a guy at bat, he steps out of the box, adjusts his glove every single time. It has no pace to it, and there's no excitement unless you're looking at every pitch waiting for a home run. Like, when a player gets on first, there's nobody stealing second. Back in the day when I was growing up, a player hit and run, sacrifice yourself, bat to the opposite side. None of that stealing.
What's that mean? Bat to the opposite side? Does that exist anymore? What are you talking about?
No. I was watching a game, and it says 100% of the time, I forget the player. I think he was on the braid, Freddie something. But he pulls the ball every single time. And so they have a shift on, and you don't take advantage of an opportunity there. You can't hit to the opposite side.
What would Wade Boggs do?
You're a professional?
What would Wade Boggs do?
Oh, Wade Boggs would bat 500.
Nah, it's changed a lot. It is a shame. One thing I was thinking about the other day, we were kids, right? If a guy like was trying to hit home runs, they said he had an uppercut in his swing, right? And now it's all about their launch angles. So
I was a Cincinnati fan, and I remember Chris Sabo. He always pulled the ball, and he had good power. But
I loved his goggles.
Yes, he had the goggles. He never went to the opposite field, and I thought, oh my goodness, this guy's not going to last. And he had a pretty good career, but that's almost every player right now. They all pull the ball. They're all trying to hit home runs, and they think that's what the fans want to see, and I think they're wrong.
Can I bore you guys for a minute?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So you asked Paul when he lost interest, and we've talked about it a lot of times off the air, right, Nate, me and you? And I kind of blame analytics and – you know, they've slowed the game down and this and that. And as I was doing my research for this show last night, I started to reflect and think back about some things. Look, I'm not an advocate of PEDs. I'm not saying take them or don't take them. I think when you take them under a doctor's care, they can enhance the quality of your life. When you take them and you're out of control, they can destroy your body. Okay. I'm not saying take them or don't take them. I'm not saying I hate steroids. That's why I'm saying all this. I don't. All right. But I think steroids, I hate what steroids did to the game of baseball. I think it slowed it down, and then analytics has kept it slowed down. I think if you look back at the stats, like we're talking about, I miss when there used to be a cat and mouse game between a pitcher and a runner at first, and yeah. You know, a really supremely good base stealer. There was a possibility that the pitcher then makes a mistake to the hitter and he hits it out, or there's a big, you know, there's a double or something like that. That was exciting to me. I missed that kind of stuff. You took the contact play out at second base where you can't touch the second baseman. You took the contact play out at home. You instituted replay, and you've robbed us of some pretty entertaining arguments that we get between the managers and the umpires. You don't see that much anymore.
Oh, yeah, I love the argument.
I mean, and I get the, you know, these are million-dollar athletes, and we don't want them to get hurt, but you're taking – some of the struggle out of the game, and we like sports because the struggle is real, like we talked about before, right? And the struggle in sports kind of mirrors life, and they've removed a lot of that for offense and the casual viewer's dollar. And I think it's at the detriment of the game. And you know, I know we'll get into sabermetrics in a minute and Billy Beane's philosophy and all that, but I have to think back, and it started with the prevalent use of steroids, which I believe started in the 80s, and it was more than just Canseco and Maguire, and it didn't just start in the 90s. It's been around for a long time, and I think they started to ruin the game after the strike. They needed the home runs. Stolen bases started going down in the early 90s. Kenny Lofton started leading the league at 72 and 60-something stolen bases. There was a time when we were little where Ricky Henderson would steal 130 bases in a season. I mean, it didn't happen every year, but he was good for 90, 80 stolen bases. You just don't see it anymore.
He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT. Eric Davis, it was a different game. But look, baseball sold its soul.
To the home run.
To the casual fan. And the casual fan, what do they want? They want the home run. That's what the casual fan wants. That's all they watch for, right? You know, purists, right? Us guys that grew up with the sport, we like the strategy behind things. We like the hit and run. We like the bump, the suicide squeeze, the stolen base, right? And that baseball, right, probably after the strike to draw fans, they want to play with a live ball, right? I think they did have that live ball, that juiced ball, right? I think they made a poor mistake for us, as loyalists, as purists of what baseball really is.
Well, I would tell you, another thing that has ruined baseball and is the highlights, because everybody wants to be a highlight. And what do they put on the highlights? Home runs. They're not putting stolen bases on highlight, you know? And so that's kind of driven where people go. And if you see somebody in a home run chase, yeah, you're going to watch the next game to see if he gets a home run. But if nobody's in a home run chase, what are you watching? You have to be a diehard fan of that team.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes to – I mean, that's where we get into Moneyball, right? Bill James.
Billy Bean.
Bill James's theory, the analyzation of baseball records. His work was recognized back in 1980, and Billy Bean developed his Moneyball theory off of Bill James's work. And Billy Bean doesn't believe in analyzing players' physical tools. He puts way less emphasis on that. That's why teams nowadays, they've all implemented this. It's a cheaper way to go. It's not just with the players, but you don't have to pay scouts. You know, traditional scouting reports have been done away. Even before this pandemic, there were a lot of minor league organizations that were going to be shut down because everything's on video now. You don't have to go watch anybody anymore and examine their hitting style and do they have quick hips and things like that. Billy Bean doesn't care about stuff like that. Can you get on base? Can you hit? And then can you create runs? He believes that power can be developed. He wants and not something that you have to come into the league with. He wants college athletes, not high school athletes, because he wants a different type of development. And that's what he's all about. It's a more wise way to spend. But in doing so, it's taken a lot of the traditional.
Can you put a pin in that real quick? I could be wrong. It could be way off base. But how many motherfucking World Series has Billy Bean won? I mean, what do we do? Are we trying to win? Are we just trying to, like, make our owners money with some sort of – isn't sports to be a champion?
Well, the problem is baseball is the organizations are the haves and have-nots because they don't share revenues like the NFL does. So you have teams that are trying to make the most with the least, and he came upon what is used widely in baseball now, but – you can say it started with the Oakland A's and has spread like a virus to the rest of the league, and now it's all over.
I think his model's dumb, right? How many times have the A's been on the cusp of something, but their player's about ready for a contract, and they trade his ass away for a bunch of minor leaguers? And yeah. Right? There's been so many times under his watch, they've been a top probably five team in the AL, that if they would have signed some of these guys to even a shorter-term contract, higher money value for that point, they could have maybe won a World Series.
Well, and what's sickening about it is their ownership group is one of the richest in baseball, right? Lou Wolf is one of the richest people in the world, if I'm not mistaken.
So what drives him? What motivates him?
More obviously, money.
A champion.
Because he's already told us. He's come out and flat out said it. Until they get a new stadium, he's not spending any money.
Then why don't he build a new stadium?
But he's not going to build that stadium. He wants Oakland to help out with it, right?
Okay, all right. Hold on a second. But winning games, it's like in football. You can win a lot of games and not have a franchise quarterback, but when you get to the playoffs in the Super Bowl, you got to have somebody that can make plays. And unfortunately, you can win a lot of games in baseball, but when you get to the playoffs, you need an ace.
Impact and, players.
You need pitching. I don't care how many great players you have. batters, it doesn't matter. If you got somebody that can shut them down, and if you got one or two guys, you know, I'm going back to my days as a Cincinnati Red fan when they beat the Oakland A's in
Jose
the World
Rio. Series.
They had Jose Rijo and a bunch of closers, Rob Dibble,
Norm Charlton.
Yeah, Norm Charlton. They had a pitching staff that shut them down. And you can have a lot of great players and win a lot of games, but unless you got that one or two aces on your team, you're not going to do it in the playoffs.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Nate, but these other teams that have analytics, they spend some money. Oakland's one of those teams that, you know, they spend no money. They don't combine. That's what I like about the Dodgers. They'll use analytics, but, and, you know, say what you want about what it's done to the game, but they'll also spend some money.
Well, and I think great organizations, right, they kind of blend things, right? They blend analytics with other approaches, right? You know, if you're just trying to save money and build like a bargain basement team that's going to be, you know, competitive but not elite, then yeah, you could just stick to one model or one mode. But I think like the teams that have won with this approach, like the Red Sox, for example, they've incorporated, besides advanced sign-stealing techniques that they've incorporated. That's what beats great pitching, Paul. That's what beats great pitching. Advanced sign-stealing techniques.
Yes. Bill Belichick would be proud. Bill Belichick.
You mean electronics. You mean advanced sign-stealing electronics.
Yes. You know, I heard one pitcher said that, look, man, he tried to base a whole lineup of guys on steroids. the batters that knew what pitches were coming.
Can somebody correct me if I'm wrong? Wasn't it the Cleveland Browns who brought in Sashi Brown from a baseball organization to try to institute analytics into their foot? Okay, you guys
wait. They got Paul DePodesta too, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Well, and get a new guy every 2 years.
Wait, can you explain to me? I just said analytics, part of it was devaluing, de-emphasizing a player's physical abilities. You tried to do that in football, you dumb motherfucker? I mean, seriously, that has got to be the dumbest. That's why they're the Cleveland Browns, right?
Well, remember, again, I just really look, there's a place for that in your organization, right?
Analytics. Not football. certain analytics. But when you try to take the money ball theory and it devalues physical tools in a combat sport like football, that's not going to work.
Well, I got a question for you, though. Why do it seem like the same organizations are the ones that hoist the trophies up? Right, in certain organizations, they can't sniff it. Right, again, with all sports, right, in life, some people are winners, some people aren't.
Leadership.
Some people own a franchise to get money out of the fans. Other franchises, like the Rooneys, they want to win, man. They're in it to make money and to win. They have a pride in being a winner.
You can do both. It's possible.
Yes, it is.
It's simple. Leadership and culture. If you have a bad culture and you have poor leadership, I don't care whether you're in business or you're Major League Baseball or the NFL. And you see that in the Cleveland Browns. I mean, they have a horrible culture. They're constantly going through front office people, coaches, and they have poor, and it starts at the top, poor leadership from the ownership to the head coach.
I totally agree. Bad leadership leads to inconsistency because you're constantly replacing your front office, general manager, head coach, and inconsistency, I believe, leads to that culture. Eventually, everything becomes toxic.
I agree. How about this? As we roll into our next subject, what role do players have in leadership? Well, okay, what I'm getting at is we have an NBA story, a veteran player. I think players, they're leaders. They're leaders of their organization. They need to kind of row or kind of set the example for other players. We have a veteran player in the NBA that bursted the bubble. Paul, tell us more about this story here.
Yes. Hey, I love to be right, but in this case, I was right on the podcast when I said the NBA is going to try the bubble. And I said NBA players love two things, strippers and weed. And there's no way they're staying in the bubble. And you could see it already. I mean, I don't know how many that they've actually told the media about, but I can count maybe five or six that have left the bubble or done something to leave the bubble, got some food at the bubble. But we got our boy Lou Williams. I believe he plays for the Clippers.
Sweet Lou Williams,
okay? So as he says, he had a hankering for some wings. So he visited his favorite place, Magic City. club.
From Red Wings.
Yeah. He did not go there for the wings, he said. Or, I mean, he didn't go there for the strippers. He went there for the food. He was hungry, and he went to his favorite place, okay? And it wasn't for the strippers. Do you buy it?
Well, come on. Obviously. Well, first of all, let me just say how disappointed I am now that I've heard Florida strip clubs are open, because I was in San Francisco the other day. I was in San Francisco the other day, and ours are closed. So I'm disappointed about that. But, I mean, you're right. It was only a matter of time till one of them tried it. Look, if I'm a player on his team and I have my family, or do they have their families there in the bubble with him?
No.
None of them? Okay, well, then maybe I go with him.
Well, you talk about sticky fingers, Sweet Lou with the sticky fingers. I don't buy that chicken. Come on now. Yeah, he didn't go there for the – maybe they got some good-ass wings.
Okay.
He didn't go there for the chicken.
This is a great story. I love this story.
No, I haven't even got to the best part, because I will tell you, you guys are wrong. He did not go for the strippers. He went for the wings. And the reason I'll tell you is because I have the Magic City Kitchen. By the way, it's in Atlanta. I have the Magic City Kitchen menu up right now. And under the wings, you will see a wing flavor called the Lou Will Lemon Pepper Barbecue.
So he's a frequent flyer there. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
He's a regular at Magic City.
I don't know about you guys, but when I'm in a strip club, eating is the last thing I'm thinking about.
Well, that's because maybe you're not there long enough like Lou Williams is, or as frequently. When you're there maybe 8 to 10 hours, he might get hungry.
Well, I know Gally's thinking about eating, just not digesting, but that's another, story. Look, tell me about this menu, Paul, and this restaurant, right? This is strippers serve the wings. How does this look? Tell me about this.
Okay, well, I'm reading directly. Well, I don't know.
You haven't been? This isn't personal.
You're acting like I'm going to give you some hands-on experience. I haven't been there. I'm just looking at the menu, okay? I will tell you, across the front of the menu, it says, the reason you are here, and it says wings. So apparently they must be famous for their wings. And one of the flavors is the Lou Will Lemon Pepper Barbecue, okay? Also, they have the Justice Magic, okay? Not sure what flavor that is, or it has to do with famous baseball player, maybe. I'm not sure. The Juju Rude Boy Jerk flavor. And
Booster's been there?
I'm not sure, but one that has me questioning, and maybe you guys can give me insight on it. There's a couple other menu items, the Peyton Chicken Potato and the Peyton Shrimp Potato. And the only two Peytons I know are Gary Peyton and Peyton Manning. Which would you put your money on that these two dishes are named after?
Peyton Hillis.
I'm still thinking about the David Justice Magic Johnson dish.
Yes. Justice
Magic. It has to be Gary Peyton, right? I mean, it has
Why? Why? White people can visit strip clubs too?
They sure can, but it sounds like this is kind of an NBA niched place.
Why? Because you think that Peyton Manning has given you this persona that he's wholesome and he never shows up to a strip club. He could be that guy.
I can see his brother hanging out there a little bit more.
Peyton, Eli?
Yeah, Eli.
Oh, my goodness.
Eli's wild.
Why would he?
Hey, does Sweet Lou Williams have ownership stake in this joint, in this place?
Maybe he was checking up and he had to do some employee reviews or something, you know.
Maybe he was losing money his retirement fund is some kind of 401k he's got wrapped up in that place.
Hey,
let's talk about this. This is serious. So this is how does this affect what NBA is doing, right? Baseball just loses almost a week from a team, right? A 60-game sprint, they lose players. Now the NBA players are bouncing out. It's only a matter of time before players start testing positive. What are they going to do?
So apparently what happened was nobody would have known he went to a strip club unless somebody that was there posted a picture of him and eventually deleted it from Twitter. Otherwise, nobody would have known that he left the bubble and went to the strip club. My question to you is, how many more of these events do we not know about? And by the way, they put him in a 10-day quarantine. So he's not available for the Clippers. I believe he starts for them. I could be wrong. He's not available for them to play for 10 days.
Well, the season hasn't started yet, right? I mean, they don't start until the end of the 30th, I believe, is when they start. But this just lends more credence to the, you know, those people on ESPN like Stephen Idiot and
say his name properly and say what you like about Stephen A. Smith. You're talking about
Stephen A. Idiot talking about, you know, players, they're not going to be able to survive inside the bubble because they need sex, right? Or whatever they need, okay? This just lends credence to that. I didn't think it would be any big deal for 2 months to come there and do your job. They have a bunch of amenities there, and they still can't handle it. Within the first week or two, they got to get out of there. It's selfishness because you're putting everybody else at risk. You're putting your job at risk because if they get too many of these cases, we've already seen postponements in baseball. You could see the same thing in basketball, and then somebody decides to come in and shut it down. So it's just not smart. You're not thinking of everybody else. You're not having any foresight. You're just thinking
about – No leadership. No player leadership.
And you're thinking about this in the moment. And you're right. No player leadership. You know, where are the leaders on that team? Are they going to hold him accountable when he comes out of quarantine?
Well, when Doc Rivers catches it, then it's a different story, right? Are they protecting their older coaches that may be more successful to more complications? But, look – We already touched on this, and we thought this was kind of a joke what the NBA is doing. Do you think the NBA finishes?
How pissed off?
They annoyed a champion in 2020.
How pissed off is Kawhi Leonard? I would say, to answer your question, Nate, yes, they do it. But I'll tell you right now, and I wouldn't put it past, like I said with the NFL, you're not going to see all – if a positive test comes back on a quarterback like Mahomes or LeBron James, you're not going to hear about that positive test. It's going to be an ankle injury or something. That's what you're going to hear because they want to give a perception that they're doing things right. And they're really pissed off about all these guys leaving the bubble. So they put this 10-day quarantine in for Lou Williams, but I'm just telling you and we're just at the beginning. We haven't even started the season yet. Can you imagine once they start the season?
Yeah, we're talking about camp here. And I think they finished the season. I think the money's too big not to. Again, I hope they had some kind of contingency plan and were ready for this. But okay. These guys need to be punished and maybe sent out of the bubble and not allowed to come back.
Here's my take on this. If Major League Baseball in their first week is canceling games, and if these basketball players can't show any personal responsibility, there's going to be a cluster of positive tests, and it's going to get scrapped. It's going to get scrapped because of poor leadership and a poor plan. I don't see there being an NBA champion in 2020.
That's going
to
be.
I don't see anyone owning and taking responsibility to making this brief little window a success, right? So that we how you always tell your kids, right? Or we know from growing up, you don't get caught the first time you do something, right? You don't do something wrong. It's like, oh yes, the first time I did it, right? You know, people do stuff. And they only get caught sometimes. So players are violating this rule. They don't have any regard because they're most likely not going to have any health concerns or be an issue for them, but they're violating the protocol, which is putting players at risk, putting coaches at risk. I don't see them finishing.
I'm looking at this menu, and they got catfish nuggets. I'm kind of liking some of the things on here.
Is there one near your place? We'll do our next podcast from there on location as soon as this quarantine's over.
Hey, trust me, if there was being the NBA bubbles in Florida, Lou Williams would have been there. But this is in Atlanta, so he made a little trip up to Atlanta to visit this place. So the food must be phenomenal.
For a California guest, what type of drive is that? 3 hours? 2 hours?
To Atlanta?
Yeah, Florida to Atlanta.
Oh, Florida to Atlanta. Nah, I would say it's an 8-10 hour drive.
There must be some damn good wings, and you were right. You were right. All right, guys. Man, look, I appreciate it. How's that cigar been? Been delicious?
Oh, it's been fantastic.
All right, we won. Any final thoughts? We want to wrap this thing up.
That was creepy. That's my final thought.
What is creepy?
That's delicious. The way Paul said that, that was creepy.
Delicious.
Well, we got to get Johnny Boy on cigars.
No, thanks. Last time I smoked one of those, I puked for about 15 minutes. I didn't know you weren't supposed to inhale. Okay, guys, fun show today, but that's going to about wrap it up for us. I want to let everyone know as a reminder, you can visit us on our website at www.nowontheclock.com or like us on our Facebook page over at Now on the Clock podcast page, where you can also email us any questions you might like answered on the air. For Nate, Polly Mac, me, Johnny G, thank you for listening and join us next week for another episode of Now on the Clock podcast, your number one sports fan podcast. Don't miss it.